there are times in this world where people just don't get us. Have you ever been in that situation where you're just living your life like you normally would, and people look at you, or they watch you, they listen to you, and they just don't get you? They don't understand why you say the things you say. They don't understand why you do the things you do. And we have to admit, we ourselves sometimes look at other people, and sometimes we look at them, and maybe we know them, maybe we don't, and we see how they're living, we hear the things that they say, we watch them, and sometimes we just don't get why they're doing the things that they do, why they say the things that they say. Well, we this morning are gathered together in this place, and we have a common bond. We have the bond of Jesus Christ. And as believers in Jesus Christ, as ones who want to live for Jesus with the entirety of our souls, with all of our strength, with all that we are, there are going to be people that are going to look at us, whether they're believers or whether they're not believers. There are going to be people that look at us, and they're just going to be wondering, what are they doing? They just don't get us. They don't get the way we live, how we're sold out for Jesus Christ. And this morning, frankly, we should not expect everybody to understand why we live the way we do. There's going to be misunderstandings. There's going to be misconceptions whenever people consider our life lived for Jesus Christ. So whenever those misunderstandings come along, whenever the misconceptions come along, how should we respond? Should we just shrug it off and say, oh, well, people are not going to get us from time to time. They're not going to understand our way of life, so just shrug it off. Is that the right response? Should we be offended, on the other hand? Should we be offended that somebody doesn't understand how we're living and they have a misconception about us? Should we ignore those who don't understand us? Or should we rather do our best to clear up the misconception, to rectify false stories or lies even that have been told about us? Should we do our best to teach the truth of what we believe by both our actions and our words? And we all know the right answer, don't we? We should do our best to tell others, whether they're believers or whether they're not believers, if somebody has a misconception about us, a misunderstanding, we should do our best to clear up the muddied waters. This morning, we need to be committed to respond to misunderstandings and misconceptions with the commitment to live out the truth of what we believe. Now, there are times when people have the facts wrong about us. They may have heard from somebody else. They may have heard it through the grapevine that so-and-so in this church, whether it be me or one of you, somebody may have heard this story about how we live our lives, what we believe, and they may have the story totally wrong. That happens sometimes, right? Have you ever been in that situation? Somebody thinks this or that about you, and they think it because of a story, or they've heard something about you, and they have the facts totally wrong. Well, that sometimes happens. If somebody has the facts wrong, we need to do our best to set the record straight. If somebody has the facts right, and sometimes that happens too, they perfectly understand where we're at as a Christian and why they understand that we're living in this way, but they may not understand why. So we need to do our best to explain why we do things the way we do, why we live in this or that way. This morning we want to consider an example from the Apostle Paul. You know, not everybody understood the Apostle Paul as he ministered for Jesus Christ, as he shared the gospel, as he taught men and women about Jesus. There were times when people in the church didn't get Paul. They didn't understand him. There were times when his own Jewish nation didn't get him. They didn't understand why he did the things that he did. There were people in the Roman world that didn't get it. There were times when these people didn't have the facts right. There were times when they did have the facts right. There were times when it was a combination of both. So what did Paul do whenever there were misconceptions about him, whenever there were misunderstandings? Well, he tried the best that he could to explain where he was coming from. He did his best to affirm the truth of what he believed. And he did this both by his words and his action. I invite you this morning to turn with me in your Bibles to the book of Acts. We'll be looking at Acts chapter 21 and just the last part of Acts 21 into chapter 22. And last week we already considered some of the verses of this passage. Acts chapter 21, and last week we began with verse 17 down through the passage. And as we turn to Acts chapter 21, if you're using one of our pew Bibles, it's page 1282. And this morning, just as we did last week, we want to learn from Paul's responses whenever people did not understand him, whenever there were misconceptions and misunderstandings about how he lived for Jesus Christ. Now, last week, we considered verses 17 through 26 of this passage, and we read about certain ones in the Jerusalem church. Paul had been on a missionary journey, and he'd returned to Jerusalem, and he'd reported all the great things that God had done through him. And there were certain ones in the Jerusalem church, and the Jerusalem church was made up of thousands of believers. And James, the leader of that church, told Paul that there were thousands of Jews that had trusted in Jesus as Savior. And there were some of these Jews who were trusting in Jesus as Savior, but they were still very zealous for the Old Testament law. And James told Paul how some of these zealous Christian Jews had a misunderstanding about Paul. There were some people that had told these Jews, these Christian Jews, that Paul was teaching the Jews of Gentile countries, so out far out in the Roman Empire, the report had gotten out there that Paul was teaching these Jews, the Jews of the diaspora of the dispersion. The report was that Paul was teaching these Jews to forsake the law of Moses, that Paul was telling these Jewish individuals not to circumcise their children, not to keep the traditions of the fathers. And the fact of the matter is, these Jewish Christians in Jerusalem had been given a false report. At least in many respects, it was a false report. Paul had not taught the Jews in the Roman Empire where he was at to forsake the law. Yes, Paul had made it very clear that the law is not the way to be right with God. That's not the way of salvation. And Paul had refused to put the Gentiles under the yoke of the law. But Paul had not told the Jews to forsake the law. He was okay if a Jewish believer wanted to keep the law, not for salvation, obviously, but if he thought that's a way to be godly is by keeping the law. If a Jewish believer wanted to keep the Sabbath, that was okay with Paul. If a Jewish believer wanted to eat only kosher foods, stay away from pork and stay away from meats offered to idols, well, that was okay with Paul. It was okay with Paul if Jewish individuals, if Jewish believers wanted to circumcise their children. But yet there were these Jewish believers in Jerusalem that thought that Paul was anti-law. They were thinking that Paul, as he ministered in these faraway lands, was teaching against the law, and that was simply not the case. So what did Paul do to try to clear up the misunderstanding? Well, he took James's advice here, as we read in Acts chapter 21. And James suggested, well, we have these four men in the Jerusalem church, and they had taken a vow. No doubt it was a Nazirite vow, and they were coming to the end of their vow. And under, according to the law, as you complete your Nazirite vow, you'd go to the temple, and you'd offer some sacrifices, and you'd shave your hair. And these are some of the things that you would do. And so James suggested to Paul, well, identify with these men, purify yourself with them, take care of their expenses. There would be three sacrifices that these men would have to offer, each of them individually. You could go to the Mosaic Law to see what the sacrifices were. And Paul was going to take the cost of those sacrifices, those animals, and he was going to pay for those sacrifices. So Paul was, by his actions, showing to these Jewish believers that he was not anti-law. He was okay identifying with the law as long as we understand what the law is all about. Paul was willing to take action to clear up the misconception. He was willing to lay down some money so that people could understand that he was not teaching against the law as the stories were being told. Well, it's in this context that we find another group of individuals that have a misunderstanding concerning the Apostle Paul. The first group that we looked at were these Jewish believers in the Jerusalem church. But now we see there are many Jewish unbelievers that have a wrong conception of who Paul is and what he's teaching and what his ministry is all about. And as we come to verses 27 through 29 of our passage here in Acts chapter 21, we see that Paul had a concern for these Jewish unbelievers. He didn't want them to go on in their ignorance and their misconceptions concerning about him or concerning him. He wanted to clear up these misconceptions, these misunderstandings. So it's in this context that we read verses 27 through 29. And when the 7 days were almost ended, so this is the 7 days for these four individuals that were in the Jerusalem church that were coming to the end of their vow. When the 7 days were almost ended, the Jews which were of Asia, when they saw him in the temple, stirred up all the people and laid hands on him, crying out, "Men of Israel, help! This is the man that teacheth all men everywhere against the people and the law and this place, and further brought Greeks also into the temple and hath polluted this holy place." For they had seen before with him in the city Trophimus, an Ephesian, whom they supposed that Paul had brought into the temple. Now, earlier we had seen the Christian Jews had a misunderstanding about Paul and how Paul went about to try to clear up that misunderstanding. Now, that's why he was in the temple at that point in time. He was going to pay for the sacrifices, and he was identifying with these men who had taken the Nazarite vow. Well, now we find this other group, the unbelieving Jews, and they saw Paul, and they knew about Paul. These men were from Asia, and Paul had spent some 3 years in the province of Asia ministering in the city of Ephesus, and they knew how the Lord was at work. Now, they had rejected Jesus Christ. They thought God was not working through Paul, but yet they had seen the results of Paul's ministry, how many people had gotten saved, how many people had turned away from idols and were serving Jesus Christ. These Jews, they were unbelievers. They had rejected Jesus. And so whenever they see Paul in the temple, they took action against him. They stirred up the people. They laid their hands on Paul, and they brought accusations against Paul, much like they brought accusations against Stephen in the early part of the book of Acts. So what did they accuse Paul of doing? They accused Paul of teaching against the people or the nation of Israel. They accused him of teaching against the law. They accused him of being against the very temple that he was in. And on top of that, they accused Paul of bringing a Gentile into the temple. We could definitely say that these Jews did not get Paul. They had a serious misunderstanding of who he was and what he was doing. These Jews were misinformed. They viewed Paul's message of the gospel as an affront to their nation of Israel, as an offense against the law and the temple. And here they had seen Paul with Trophimus earlier, and they assumed that Paul had brought Trophimus, a Gentile, into the temple. And you understand here that it was absolutely forbidden for a Gentile to enter into the inner part of the temple. We have, if you'd have a picture or a diagram of the main temple area, there are these markers. They're made of stone. They'd be 4.5 feet tall. They're inscribed in Greek and Latin. They would be in the outer court of the temple. This outer court that surrounded the court of women. Now, the Gentiles could enter into the very outermost part of the temple complex, but they were forbidden to go in any further. And if they went in further, there was the penalty of death. And the Jews were accusing Paul of bringing Trophimus, a Gentile, into this inner court, something that was absolutely forbidden. So the Jews were misunderstanding Paul, weren't they? The Jews at this time, they were very zealous for their law, and they reacted against anyone that was encroaching upon their view of the law. They reacted against anything that they viewed as a compromise or a violation of their strongly held beliefs. So these lost Jews, they didn't understand Paul. They certainly didn't get his ministry. They wanted to kill him because of what they thought he was doing. And so we come to verses 30 and 31. And all the city was moved, and the people ran together, and they took Paul and drew him out of the temple, and forthwith the doors were shut. And as they went about to kill him, tidings came unto the chief captain of the band that all Jerusalem was in an uproar. So here Luke tells us the whole city of Jerusalem was stirred up. It was in a chaotic condition. The city was agitated. And many of the Jews had converged around Paul, and they were wanting to kill him, and they were beating him at this point in time. And they were beating him. They wanted to kill him because of their thoughts about who Paul was and what he was doing. And they had a total misunderstanding about him. It was in the midst of this chaos that we read that there was somebody that came to rescue him. And maybe it's not so much to rescue him, but he came to stop a riot or an uprising. And this man is called a chief captain of the band in the King James. He's a man who's over 1,000 soldiers. We'd call him a tribune in our modern terminology. In the terminology of the Roman army, he would be a tribune. And he would have been stationed at the northwest corner of the temple, what's called the Fortress Antonia. And it's this man that came along with 200 soldiers. At least there were two centurions with him, and the centurions were over 100 men each. And this tribune came with hundreds of soldiers to quell this uproar. And we read in verse 32, who immediately took soldiers and centurions, ran down unto them, and when they saw the chief captain of the soldiers and the soldiers, they left beating of Paul. So why did all this happen? It happened because of the Jews' misunderstanding concerning Paul. Now, some of it, I think, was a genuine misunderstanding. Some of it was because of their disbelief. Now, Paul, what was his desire? His desire was to clear up the misconceptions, to clear up the misunderstandings. But before we see how Paul endeavored to clear up the misunderstanding, let's move on to verses 33 through 36. Because we read about this chief captain or the tribune. He too didn't understand who Paul was. He was even more ignorant than some of the others. Then the chief captain came near and took him and commanded him to be bound with two chains and demanded who he was and what he had done. And some cried one thing and some another among the multitude. And when he could not know the certainty for the tumult, he commanded him to be carried into the castle. And when he came upon the stairs, so it was that he was borne of the soldiers for the violence of the people. For the multitude of the people followed after, crying, "Away with him!" So here's the tribune, the man of highest authority in the Roman army in the city of Jerusalem. And along with him, two centurions, and with the centurions, probably 200 men. And they take Paul, they rescue him from the crowd, they chain him, and the tribune demands of him, "Who are you? What have you done?" And the situation was so chaotic, and whether the tribune asked Paul specifically or he just asked the crowds of Jews around him, there were so many answers going out. The crowd was shouting one thing and another against Paul, and the tribune couldn't make any sense of it. So he commanded that Paul would be brought back to the fortress, or back to the barracks where the soldiers were stationed. And as they started going up the stairs from the temple, the people were pushing against Paul and the soldiers so much that the soldiers had to actually carry him up the stairs. So you can see the chaos that had ensued upon the Jews' reaction against Paul. Now, if you're Paul, you're being carried by the soldiers up the stairs to the fortress, and the people were still crying out against you so that you might be killed. Would you want to just hang around there? Would you like to just camp out with these thousands of Jews that were wanting to kill you? Or would you kind of want to get into that fortress, into some safety and some quietness so people aren't railing down on you? Well, I think I'd probably want to get into a safe place, right? But that wasn't Paul's mindset. Paul wanted to confront the misconceptions about him. He wanted to clear up the misunderstandings. And so we read in verses 37 through 39. And even before Paul addresses the crowd, he's going to address the misunderstanding, the ignorance of the tribune himself. And as Paul was led into the castle, he said unto the chief captain, "May I speak unto thee?" Who said, "Canst thou speak Greek? Art not thou that Egyptian which before these days madest an uproar, and leddest out into the wilderness 4,000 men that were murderers?" But Paul said, "I am a man which am a Jew of Tarsus, a city in Cilicia, a citizen of no mean city, and I beseech thee, suffer me to speak unto the people." So there's misunderstandings flying all over the place, right? The Jewish believers didn't understand what Paul was doing. The Jewish unbelievers had a lot of misconceptions about Paul. Here's the Roman tribune. He's never met Paul before, and he didn't know who he was. His idea was that he was this Egyptian, this notorious Egyptian, that in previous days had led some 4,000 murderers or assassins out of the city. And the plan was that this Egyptian had proclaimed, "If you go out with me, I'm going to make the walls of Jerusalem fall down, and then we can go and we can take the city." So here we have this Egyptian with his 4,000 assassins. And what happened? Well, the Romans learned of the plan, and the Romans took their army, and they killed many of these 4,000 men. But the Egyptians slipped away. Well, this tribune thought, "Aha, maybe I have this notorious Egyptian on my hands now. Maybe I've captured him." That's what the tribune said as Paul asked him, "Well, can I speak to you?" But what did Paul say? "I'm not that Egyptian. Don't confuse me with that notorious criminal. I'm not that Egyptian. I'm not even from Egypt." He said, "I'm from Tarsus. I'm a Jew. I'm not some uncultured man. No, I'm from the cultured city of Tarsus." Tarsus is no insignificant city. And Paul asked the tribune so that he might speak to these crazed crowds of Jewish individuals. See, Paul was wanting to clear up the misunderstanding with the tribune, and he'll clear up even more later on in the passage. But now Paul's focus is addressing the thousands upon thousands of Jewish people that are wanting to kill him. Well, look at what Paul says, what he does to clear up the misunderstanding. Look at verses 40 and following. We'll read quite a long passage here. "And when he had given him license, Paul stood on the stairs and beckoned with the hand unto the people. And when there was made a great silence, he spake unto them in the Hebrew tongue, saying, Men, brethren, and fathers, hear ye my defense which I make now unto you. And when they heard that he spake in the Hebrew tongue to them, they kept the more silence, and he saith, I am verily a man which am a Jew, born in Tarsus, a city in Cilicia, yet brought up in this city at the feet of Gamaliel, and taught according to the perfect manner of the law of the fathers, and was zealous toward God, as ye all are this day. And I persecuted this way unto the death, binding and delivering into prisons both men and women, as also the high priest doth bear me witness, and all the estate of the elders, from whom I also received letters unto the brethren, and went to Damascus to bring them which were there bound unto Jerusalem for to be punished. We read in verse 6, And it came to pass that as I made my journey and was come nigh unto Damascus about noon, suddenly there shone from heaven a great light round about me, and I fell unto the ground and heard a voice saying unto me, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And I answered, Who art thou, Lord? And he said unto me, I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom thou persecutest. And they that were with me saw indeed the light, and were afraid, but they heard not the voice of him that spake to me. And I said, What shall I do, Lord? And the Lord said unto me, Arise, and go into Damascus, and there it shall be told thee of the things which are appointed for thee to do. And when I could not see for the glory of that light, being led by the hand of them that were with me, I came unto Damascus. And one Ananias, a devout man according to the law, having a good report of all the Jews which dwelt there, came unto me and stood and said unto me, Brother Saul, receive thy sight. In the same hour I looked up upon him. And he said, The God of our fathers hath chosen thee, that thou shouldest know his will, and see that just one, and shouldest hear the voice of his mouth. For thou shalt be his witness unto all men of what thou hast seen and heard. And now why tarriest thou? Arise and be baptized, and wash away thy sins, calling on the name of the Lord. And it came to pass that when I was come again to Jerusalem, even while I prayed in the temple, I was in a trance. And I saw him saying unto me, Make haste, and get thee quickly out of Jerusalem, for they will not receive thy testimony concerning thee. And I said, Lord, they know that I imprisoned and beat in every synagogue them that believed on thee. And when the blood of thy martyr Stephen was shed, I also was standing by and consenting unto his death, and kept the raiment of them that slew him. And he said unto me, Depart, for I will send thee far hence unto the Gentiles. This is how Paul tried to clear up the misunderstanding. What had the lost Jews accused him of? They had accused him of being against the nation of Israel. They basically accused him of treason, of defecting from the interests of his nation. They had accused him of being against the law and against the temple. They had accused him of being a Jew that was against everything that was dear to the nation. They said, Paul, you're a traitor. You performed the worst kind of treason, the worst kind of sedition against this nation. And they wanted him to be killed because of that. Well, Paul, in this speech to them, went to great lengths to show them he was not a Jew against his people. He had not forsaken what Israel was truly about. He had not been unfaithful to his people. He hadn't been unfaithful to the law or the temple. He had been faithful to all of these. And what's more important is he had been faithful to God. So as we consider what Paul said here in just a brief fashion, Paul here is recounting what earlier is recounted in Acts chapter 9. Luke recorded in Acts chapter 9 what happened to Paul as he was on the way to Damascus. So we've already studied much of what Paul records here in detail. So here is Paul, in this passage, recounting in a first-person manner what happened on that road to Damascus and thereafter. And as he tells these Jews the account, he's especially emphasizing parts of the story that show them, I'm not against Israel. I'm not against the law. I'm not against the temple. God has done a great work in my life. The God of Israel has changed me, and that's why I am doing what I'm doing. So as we first of all consider how Paul addressed the crowd, look at verse 40. How does he address them? He addresses them in the Hebrew language, or very probably a variation of Hebrew, which would be Aramaic. So he doesn't speak in the Greek language like he did to the tribune, the Roman officer. He spoke to the people in their own tongue, their native language, which would have been either Hebrew or Aramaic. And the word translated Hebrew in the text can be referring either to Aramaic or Hebrew. So he's speaking in a language that they treasured. It wasn't just You know, if you think about being from a different country, like if you're from China, yeah, you may know English, but you especially like speaking Chinese, right? So here Paul is in Judea. The language that is prized in that country, in Judea, is Hebrew or Aramaic, not the Greek that the Romans spoke or Latin that the Romans spoke. And so here Paul is speaking in their own language. And so you'll notice here, as he spoke in Hebrew, what did the Jews do? They silenced themselves because they realized he's speaking to us in our own language, not in Greek. Notice also in verse 3 of chapter 22 here, Paul focuses in on his birth and his training. He is a Jew. Yes, he was born in Tarsus in Cilicia, but where was he trained? He was trained in the very city of Jerusalem where they're at right now. He was trained under a very prominent rabbi. His name is Gamaliel. So Paul was not ignorant of the law. He wasn't ignorant of the traditions of the fathers. He knew them better than probably many of the Jews that were wanting to kill him. He was zealous for the God of the Jews. Well, how zealous was Paul? As Paul looks at his past life, he says, I'm as zealous as you are, even more so. He was so zealous for the way of the fathers that he persecuted the followers of the way, the followers of Jesus. He persecuted them to the death. He bound and he delivered into prison both men and women. And it was for that very purpose that he was on the road to Damascus. He wanted to put into prison those who were claiming Jesus as Savior. And so while on that road to Damascus, what happened? Paul's life was turned upside down. It was around noon, and there was this bright light from heaven. It was brighter than the noonday sun. And Paul fell on the ground, and he heard a voice asking him, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And Paul asked, well, who are you, Lord? Who is this that's talking to me? And the voice responds, I'm Jesus of Nazareth. I'm the one that you're persecuting. And Paul asked, well, what should I do, Lord? And the Lord replied, go to Damascus. There it's going to be told what I have appointed you to do. And Paul obeys. He goes to Damascus. And who meets him there at Damascus? A pious Jew named Ananias, a man who was acknowledged by the Jews to be a godly man. Ananias comes to Paul and says, this is what the Lord has for you to do. Well, Paul obeys the Lord's message. He trusts in Jesus Christ. He's baptized. And Paul begins to boldly proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, sometime later, he comes back to Jerusalem. He's in the temple. He's praying in the temple. All of a sudden, he has this vision of the Lord. And the Lord tells him, don't stay here in Jerusalem. They're not going to receive your message. Go to the faraway lands of the Gentiles. That's what I want you to do. That's what the Lord says. See, Paul went to great lengths to show what I am doing is not my own idea. The message I'm proclaiming, it wasn't my own idea. I wanted to stay in Jerusalem, Paul said, and minister to my own people. But Paul said, no, don't stay in Jerusalem. Go to the faraway lands of the Gentiles. So Paul went to great lengths as he gave the speech to the unbelieving Jews that he is not against the law. He's not against the temple. He's not against the nation of Israel. Paul's defense was clear. He told the crowd, I was where you are right now. I was a zealous Jew. I thought the Christians were out of their minds, that Christians were heretics against the nation of Israel and the God of Israel. But Paul came to realize that Jesus is the way, that Jesus is God's own son, and that Jesus is the Messiah. Well, how did the Jews respond? The unbelieving Jews, they still don't get Paul, even after Paul did his best to clarify the situation. They still wanted to kill him. As we continue reading, we come now to verses 22 through 24. And as Paul spoke about Gentiles and going to minister to the Gentiles and share with them the gospel, what do we read in verse 22? And they gave him audience unto this word, and then lifted up their voices and said, away with such a fellow from the earth, for it is not fit that he should live. And as they cried out and cast off their clothes and threw dust in the air, the chief captain commanded him to be brought into the castle and bade that he should be examined by scourging, that he might know wherefore they cried so against him. See, the Jews, the unbelieving Jews there in the temple, and those who had gathered around wanting to kill Paul, they didn't think that the Gentiles deserved salvation directly from God through Jesus. They thought, well, first of all, the Gentiles have to become part of the nation of Israel and keep all the laws and the traditions. And so they want Paul to be put to death. They throw their clothes off, probably just their outer garments, and they threw dust into the air. They cried out against him. And so what does the tribune do? He still doesn't have the answer, does he? He doesn't know who Paul is. He doesn't know why there's all this uproar. Remember, Paul, when he spoke to the Jews, he spoke in Hebrew. The tribune very likely didn't understand the Hebrew. And so he knew that the crowd wanted to kill him, that Paul had upset the crowd, but he didn't have any answer. So what did he do? He determines that he's going to be brought back to the barracks, and he would be examined by scourging so that the tribune can find out, well, what's going on? He wants to get answers right away. That's what the tribune wants to do. And what does this scourging involve? It involves torture of the worst kind. Imagine with me a whip of sorts. The whip has a wood handle, no doubt, and you have leather thongs. And then tied into that those leather thongs, you'd have bits of sharp bone or bits of metal. And that's the torture that the tribune was going to use against Paul to get the answers to his question. And so as we come to verses 25 and 26, and as they bound him with the thongs, Paul said unto the centurion that stood by, "Is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is a Roman and uncondemned?" When the centurion heard that, he went and told the chief captain, saying, "Take heed what thou doest, for this man is a Roman." Then the chief captain came and said unto him, "Tell me, art thou a Roman?" He said, "Yea." And the chief captain answered, "With a great sum obtained I this freedom." And Paul said, "But I was freeborn." So do you see with me how throughout this passage, there are so many different people that don't get Paul? First of all, it was the Jews in the church that didn't understand Paul. Then it was the Jews in the temple, the unbelieving Jews, that didn't get Paul. And now it's the Roman tribune. First of all, the Roman tribune thought that he was that Egyptian that was a traitor, that was a notorious criminal. Well, Paul said, "No, I'm not that Egyptian." Now the tribune thinks that he's not a Roman citizen, that Paul is not a Roman citizen, and that the tribune can get his answers through scourging Paul. Well, as Paul is being tied up and they're about ready to scourge him, Paul asks the question, "Is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is a Roman and uncondemned?" And whenever the centurion heard that, the man who was overseeing the scourging, the centurion goes to the tribune and says, "Take heed what you do. This man is a Roman. Be careful. This man is a Roman, and he shouldn't have even been tied up to begin with." And so the captain, the tribune, comes to talk with Paul personally, and he asks him, "Are you really a citizen?" And Paul says, "Yes, I am really a citizen." The tribune says, "Well, I purchased my citizenship with a large sum of money." Well, Paul said, "I was born a Roman citizen." So who had the more honor, the tribune or Paul? Well, Paul, as you think about citizenship, both of them were citizens, but Paul was Roman born. The tribune had paid a lot of money to get his citizenship. What had he done? He had bribed the officials, and he had gotten his citizenship through bribery. So the tribune was a citizen, but his citizenship wasn't much compared to Paul's citizenship. Because probably Paul's father or his grandfather had done something noble to help the Roman Empire, and so they bequeathed upon him this Roman citizenship. And so Paul is a noble Roman citizen. See, the tribune did not get Paul. He was totally ignorant of who he was. And what does Paul do? He does his best to clear up the misunderstanding. Verse 29, "Then straightway they departed from him, which should have examined him. And the chief captain also was afraid after he knew that he was a Roman and because he had bound him." The tribune is gaining a glimpse of who Paul is. He wants to find more answers, but he can't find them out through torturing Paul like he had originally intended. But throughout the passage, looking at what we saw last week and what we see this week, it's evident that many people just didn't get Paul and his ministry. They didn't understand what Paul stood for, how he was living for Jesus Christ. See, there are so many false reports circulating about Paul. There were so many people that were believing lies about Paul. See, Paul was a zealous Christian serving Jesus Christ in faraway lands. God was doing a great work through Paul. But the false reports circulating were accusing Paul of being anti-law, as being against the nation of Israel, as being against the temple. Well, Paul showed the Jews in the Jerusalem church that wasn't the case. He showed them that this wasn't the case by his actions. He tried to convince the unbelieving Jews of the truth of the matter by sharing his past with them. He tried to dispel their ignorance by telling them the truth. And then with the Roman tribune, First of all, the Roman tribune thought he was a treasonous Egyptian. Then he thought he was a non-Roman citizen. Well, Paul told the tribune the truth as well. Of all these three groups, the tribune is the only one that really listened, right? The tribune listened to Paul and believed him and took action accordingly. Hopefully, the Jewish Christians listened to what Paul had to say and took notice of his action and changed their thoughts accordingly. The unbelieving Jews, unfortunately, really didn't listen at all. They continued in disbelief, continuing to reject Jesus and his servant Paul. So how does all this apply to us today? Well, today there are going to be people, there probably are even right now people, that do not understand us for who we are as Christians in Jesus. There could be people even in this building. There could be people that don't understand others in this congregation. There are misconceptions, perhaps, that are floating around. And sometimes the misconceptions are due just because of a false report that has been circulating. Just maybe assumptions have been believed when they shouldn't have been accepted. So what should we do in light of false conceptions about us, or what should we do when we think of others? Well, we need to make sure that we have the truth straight, right? Whenever we look at others, whenever we observe others, we need to make sure that we don't judge, that we don't jump to conclusions. Maybe we hear about another church down the street. Well, they do this or that, or we think of this family, and they, you know, they claim to be believers, but they live this or that way, and that's not how we would live. So sometimes we jump to conclusions, and we believe a report through the grapevine. Well, that's not the best action sometimes, is it? It really isn't the best action at all to just believe something without making sure that it's true. Well, there are people that probably have heard stories about us. And maybe it's something they've heard about the way we live our life, about what we say, about, you know, any number of things. What should we do when it comes to our knowledge that people just don't understand us? They have a false conception of us. Well, we need to be like Paul. Paul, by his actions, Paul, by his words, tried to clear up the muddied waters. He did his best to communicate the truth of how he lived for Jesus Christ. So let's follow Paul and his good example. Paul did his best to show the truth of what he believed. He let the light of Jesus Christ shine through his life, and his desire was for the light of Christ to dispel the darkness of ignorance and the lies of the devil. So let's do our best this morning and in the days ahead to show men and women, both saved and lost, the reality of who we are in Jesus Christ. And as we do this, may people understand truly who we are in Christ. May they understand what God has done in our lives. We're so thankful for what Paul has shown us here in the book of Acts, the examples we can learn from.